Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally Elcordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, I am interviewing a woman who advocates for the public all the time because she educates people about vaccination. And what an educator she is, par excellence. You will not find another as good as she. So I'm thrilled to have Mary E. Toko, whose website is childhoodshots.com, on our program today. So let me pick her up forthwith.
How are you?
I'm thrilled to have you on the show, Mary. I truly am. It's been a long time. And you're very busy. You travel the country, the entire country, if I'm not mistaken, educating people about vaccinations.
Wherever they're going to, you know, invite me is where I'll go. I've also been throughout Canada. All I tell people is if you have a crowd, get some people together. If you have a conference, if you want to do a symposium, just contact me and we'll make it happen. Because, Sally, I believe that unless parents have important information about vaccine ingredients and vaccine production, they cannot make an informed vaccine decision. And if you don't have this information, you're just blindly trusting, you're vaccinating, and then unfortunately, many times damage is done.
Vaccine production. Now, that's an issue I never get into and I never hear anyone else speak about. I would be very interested, before you say why we need a national moratorium on vaccination now, if you would kindly explain what that's, you know, about vaccine production.
Well, it's been changing over the years. Years ago, they literally would have to grow and breed viruses on organs, decomposing organs from various different animals and byproducts. And it's changed. It's become very, very scientific, mainstreamed. It's quicker. They don't have to go through the years of developing a virus. They now can produce them very quickly. And I really don't care to get into the deep science of it. I do know that they are still using many parts of animals where they get the viruses from, and many of these animal parts are what are causing some of the problem with food allergies and other problems when children get vaccinations. But
well, let me just say that when I interviewed Sandy Linde last from Norway, she was saying they were using human malignant cancer tumors to grow these viruses on.
We do know that the polio vaccine, the original polio vaccine that was produced back in the early 50s, at that time was contaminated with cancer viruses. It's very easy for people to look this up online. They can literally go to YouTube and pull up videos on this topic where you have physicians or doctors who were producing vaccines back then stating that, yes, we know that the vaccines have been contaminated, the polio vaccine specifically. There's also a book called Dr. Mary's Monkey, and that also documents how the vaccines were contaminated with cancer viruses. Remember, this was in the 50s. It was very crude science. They really couldn't even see what was in vaccines back then. So we only know a fraction of what was in those vaccines, and it has been documented that they did have cancer viruses in them.
Well, they're so prevalent now as a result of that they're now using those tissues, these malignant tissues, human, to grow. You know, this is where it's just going from the unsublime to the wildly ridiculous. But anyway, so Mary, I've asked you to call in to say why we need a moratorium on vaccination now. I know that when I brought this up to you, you immediately said yes. You know so much that how could you say other is really the bottom line. But explain to people why this is necessary.
Well, first of all, the intention behind vaccinations is to avoid infectious illnesses in children. To, you know, of course, in the 1800s, in the very early 1900s, there were really severe problems with various infectious illnesses that would kill people by the millions. And it was a problem because of lack of sanitation, lack of good nutrition, you know, we didn't have septic fields and clean water. So there was a huge problem with infectious illnesses. So I think the motive behind vaccines was genuine. And I certainly think that most people would agree that in the beginning, there was a good intention behind the use of the vaccination. But what we have found now is because of the advancements in science, and also we now have three generations who have been vaccinated, we are seeing the bigger picture of what vaccines do to the human body. And it's because the theory was based on outdated information. Back in the very beginning, they didn't understand the immune system. They had very little understanding of how it functions and how we develop natural immunity. And so in my lectures, I actually reference a couple of immunologists who talk about how immunology, because of medical science and advancements, we now know the immune system functions very different than when it did back in the 40s and 50s when we were developing the vaccines. Back then, physicians or the scientists thought that the immune system was an organ, a pocket in the body. And they didn't understand how when you inject something into the human body, it will affect the whole body, not just the immune system. So it was based on a flawed concept of the immune system. And so now we know, in fact, the immunology textbooks were rewritten in 1995 to reflect this new understanding. And in 1993, they actually created a whole new field of medicine called neuroimmunology, because they realized and recognized that the immune system is intricately connected to the immune to the nervous system, and that both of them work together to create the immune system and to create the immunity in the body. And so with this new understanding, they realized that the immune system is not simply a pocket or an isolated a part of the body that works with autonomy, but that it's very much interrelated to the rest of the body and encompasses you've got your glandular system, the endocrine system, the nervous system. So as I said, they had to rewrite the university textbooks in 1995, and basically what that tells me is if something is based on a false presupposition, then foundationally it's wrong. So, but of course, you know, the medical system, I believe the vaccines are their sacred cow. Vaccines, unlike any other medication or drugs, do not have to go through the same safety testing in order to prove that they are safe. They are completely different. They're treated differently than every other drug out there, and yet they're given to brand-new babies and children. So it really is alarming when people find out that they do not have to go through the same safety studies that regular drugs go through. So now we know that a baby, by the time they're 5 weeks old, developing in mother, that their body is producing T cells that will eventually become a very important part of the immune system. And so when that baby is born, their immune system is ready to engage with the world, and the very birth process engages it and sets it up and begins it to work. And so when a baby comes out, they do have what it takes to fight infections. It's just underdeveloped and immature. And so we have a whole different understanding of immune system development. And I like to quote Dr. Tatiana Abukanich. She is an incredible immunologist who was actually involved with immunology research at some of the major universities out there. And she actually wrote a vaccine ebook called Vaccine Illusions. And she says in her ebook, after years of doing research in immunology, observing scientific activities of my superiors, and analyzing vaccine issues, I realized that vaccination is one of the most deceptive inventions that science could ever convince the world to accept. And so that is just one statement from her ebook that I like to reference. And she says, it is not immunity that we gain via vaccination, but a puny surrogate of immunity. For this reason, vaccination at its core is neither a safe nor effective method of disease prevention. And so we have this new understanding since the mid-1990s of how the immune system functions and works, and we're still learning all the time. But our vaccinations are based on an outdated presupposition that I believe is 100% false. vaccinations do not resolve in immunity. They resolve in a suppression of the immune system, a completely different way that the body would have us build immunity. They don't protect us for a lifetime. Their own science and research says that you have to continually get vaccinations every few years because they don't result in immunity. So I believe that parents must do their research. Doctors have to take off the blinders and start looking back at this and rethink all of this. Because, you know, there's a great quote that I saw on the internet, and I just, you know, add it to my talk. It says, if someone is going down the wrong road, he doesn't need motivation to speed him up. He needs education to turn him around. And that's what I think is going on within this whole vaccine industry. We need to stop and look at what we're doing and realize it's based on a false presupposition, and therefore the very foundation of vaccinology is wrong.
Well, there's something I wanted to ask you because it's been weighing heavily on me. I read an article that I did not save, but this is why I would like to run it by you, see if you've heard anything about this. That when a pregnant mother, and to the audience, the CDC schedule now recommends 4 doses while a child is pregnant, the flu shot, diphtheria, tet, pertussis, during pregnancy. Both of them very heavily laden with mercury. And Mary, of course, does a spectacular job of explaining what the body can tolerate and how vastly vaccines exceed that. However, when I read that when you inject a pregnant woman, that when the mercury reaches the fetus, that it then does not continue through the circulation system back to the mother, it remains there. Have you heard that?
You know, I haven't seen any science on that, but it's very plausible. That child has their own little system within the womb. We have something called, you know, there's supposed to be natural barriers between mother and child, but obviously chemicals can breach that. We saw that with the drug thalidomide. And many other drugs that we know now that are given to mother while pregnant will lead to severe, you know, deformation of the baby, severe neurological problems. And so it doesn't surprise me. In fact, I think it's absolutely it doesn't make any sense to vaccinate a pregnant woman with a vaccine that contains mercury or aluminum or other man-made chemicals, even if there's a slight chance that it can breach that protective barrier between mother and child and pass through the placenta. So I wouldn't doubt that, and I haven't seen the science on it, so I really can't comment. But we do know that Dr. Marini said, and this is he's a PhD immunologist and a chiropractor, he says, quote, when a pregnant mother gets a vaccine with aluminum or mercury, it can disrupt the delicate balance of the unborn child and lead to neurological problems that show up later as learning problems, ADHD, and autism, end quote. So that's from an immunologist. So if the immunologists are saying that this is what can happen, this is what can happen. What else is alarming is when a mother is given Tylenol, which contains acetaminophen. This is a whole other research project that was done that I reference on my website, childhoodshots.com, the dangers of acetaminophen in like Tylenol. Acetaminophen crosses into the placenta and into the child and actually disrupts liver cells while the baby's developing. So it's not just vaccines, Sally, while mothers are pregnant. It's any medication or drug. We just don't know enough. And to randomly say that we can give women injections of all different kinds and over-the-counter meds that are containing these toxic elements while pregnant, to me, is just it's dangerous. And so, you know, think about that too, parents. If, you know, if you're having a baby, watch everything you put in your mouth as well as what you get injected into your body. But what I'd like to do is let's just assume that a baby goes through pregnancy with no exposure to any of these chemicals and has a wonderful birth. And so what Dr. Marini said is that the very birth process prepares the child and also stimulates the immune system. So when a baby travels down the birth canal, they're picking up natural flora in mother, which through the mouth and the nose and the ears, and that natural flora starts the Th1 arm of the immune system immediately. It activates it. Because while the baby is in mother, that system is suppressed. Otherwise, the baby and mom will fight each other. So the baby's own immune system is suppressed while pregnant. When the baby travels down the birth canal, that immune system is sparked to life, and then all of a sudden that child is developing its Th1 arm of the immune system. Then when a baby also gets breast milk, the breast milk encourages, which is colostrum, the first breast milk, it encourages the Th1 and the bacteria that the baby picked up in its mouth and nose and eyes. It encourages that bacteria to colonize into healthy gut flora. So for the first several months, while that baby's nursing and getting just that wonderful breast milk, the baby is developing its gut flora, where 75% of the immune system response lives. So a natural birth is very important, breastfeeding is very important, and a child that goes through that process will have the best chance for a healthy immune system. And then a baby, basically how it works from that point forward, let me see here. A baby gets exposed to bacteria, funguses, spores, and viruses all through their mouth, nose, and ears, and lungs. That's the natural way that children are supposed to get exposed to any kind of infectious illness. And then a million times a day, a newborn baby will be responding appropriately to these foreign things. Also, when a baby gets breast milk, hopefully mother is passing on natural immunity to that child during the first 6 months of life, because they themselves are not capable of producing white blood cells to fight their own infections. So there's many, many aspects to developing natural immunity. But nonetheless, this is how nature designed it. This is how God created the body. God didn't make any mistakes. I believe that when man interferes with this process, because of their intellect and because they think they know better, they actually can disrupt this delicate balance in both the baby and the mom. So then let's say a baby goes through this whole wonderful process and mother's been taking care of her body well and we have the healthy baby at birth. In this country, the first vaccination given to a newborn baby is the hepatitis B vaccine. Now, hepatitis B is an adult disease common among prostitutes, drug users, people who are having multiple sexual partners. It is not common in children. And in this country, we also test mothers while they're pregnant to see if they're a carrier of hepatitis B. So the doctors have the information as to who's a carrier and who's not a carrier. But nonetheless, across the board, every infant is encouraged or required to get the hepatitis B vaccine day one or two in the hospital because of hospital policy. That vaccination, as I stated, is not an infectious illness for children. It contains high levels of aluminum. And before I get into how much aluminum is in that vaccine, I want to quote the only study ever done on injected aluminum in infants was called the Aspen study, the ASPEN study. And you can look it up and Google it. And what that stands for is the American Society for Parenteral Nutrition and Enteral Nutrition, which is how premature babies get fed nutrition in the hospital before they get to nurse or be bottle fed. So what this study was done in 1994, they took 200 premature infants who are getting this IV nutrition, which they know contains high levels of aluminum. And they reduced the aluminum down for 100 babies to a lower level of aluminum, and they left the aluminum levels normal for 100 other babies. And what they found, what their conclusion was, anything over 20 micrograms of aluminum injected into a baby can lead to neurological damage that will show up at 18 months of age. It can be ADD, attention deficit, learning problems, whatever. But that was their conclusion. Anything over 20 micrograms is considered toxic for an infant, especially these newborn premature babies. So now let's go back to the first vaccine given day one in the hospital. So standard procedure, baby is born. Sometimes before they even leave the delivery room, that vial of hepatitis B vaccine is sitting there. And if a parent isn't careful, oh boy, sorry about that.
That's okay.
If a parent isn't careful, that injection will go right into the baby. That vaccination contains 225 micrograms of aluminum, okay? And this is according to Neil Miller, 250 micrograms of aluminum. Neil Miller, his website is thinktwice.com. He is a major researcher. He has written dozens of books about vaccinations, 100% fully referenced, medically documented books. Again, his website is thinktwicenot.com, and he says that that first vaccination contains 250 micrograms of aluminum. That's hundreds of times greater than what they consider safe. And I hope people's mouths are dropping. I hope they're going, I can't believe this, because this to me is it's like a criminal assault on infants the day they're born. And when they say kids are born with autism now, how will we ever know if we're actually giving them a vaccine the day they're born that has the potential to cause autism? And so they're saying it's genetic.
They're saying it's genetic. Well, sure, yeah, they give it that early. But in terms of that, I saw this woman's comment on a stream in Facebook. She was saying that her child was born, and she had about 2 hours with her little person before they took the baby away. Now, mind you, she told them she did not the hepatitis B vaccine. And when they returned the child to her, the child was different. She said, I spent 2 solid hours with my newborn baby, and he returned to me different. And when I got home, I realized upon looking at the bill that they had charged me for the hepatitis B vaccine, and that was the difference. So right there, the mother could tell instantaneously the difference between her newborn before the hepatitis B and directly thereafter.
And Sally, there are thousands, if not millions, of parents who are saying the same thing. And so this is just a call out to parents. If you are going to have a hospital birth, which probably 98% of the people have, you do not let that baby out of your sight. You make sure you have in writing to everybody in that room, you know, your husband, your spouse, or your partner, you make sure that they don't let that baby out of the sight. If it's a C-section birth, you still don't let that baby out of your sight. You're right there because they believe that it is in their best interest to do whatever is medically necessary for that child. And when you sign paperwork getting into the hospital, you are agreeing that they do whatever is medically necessary for that child. So nurses who don't know better, who are basically programmed to believe these things are necessary and safe, are doing what they feel is right. And they will completely, oftentimes, ignore and just do what they're told to do. And so it's really hard because parents, you have to know that this is your child. And even if that baby's gone for a split second, they can give this baby the vaccine. So don't let the baby out of your sight, no matter what. Exercise your rights. Have a written birth plan. Tell your obstetrician, I do not want any injections given to my baby without me knowing exactly what's going on. I encourage you to look at the vitamin K shot. Again, I don't tell people what to do. I say do your research and make an informed decision. If you want the shots, good, you're going to get them. If you don't want the shots for your baby, you have to know how to protect yourself and your child because you are walking into a medical system that believes these things are great and necessary, and they actually feel that if you don't do these shots, your child is at risk. So it's up to you as the parent to be fully informed and make fully informed vaccine decisions and know how to protect those children if they're born in that system.
Right. Well,
Sally, can I talk a little bit about other vaccines that the child will get the first year of life and maybe
like
just talk about just the aluminum levels?
Anything you feel to be important, I know is important, so please.
Okay. So we're told over and over and over again that vaccines have been tested for safety. They are proven safe, and we're also told over and over that vaccinations do not lead to autism or other problems. So I want to just talk about specifically the aluminum levels that are found in all of the vaccines that children are getting. And I'm going to reference to the website novaccine.com. This website was developed by an incredible chiropractor. He spent years and years developing it, and then he turned it over to my daughter, Dr. Renee Hunter, who is a holistic chiropractor, and she has been managing it. And I will tell you this right now, it's going through some updating. She's in the process of updating it, so it's running a little slow. But this site will give you all the vaccine ingredients for every vaccination, make and model, and so you have tons of information here available to you. So anyway, so a baby gets the hepatitis B vaccine containing 250 micrograms of aluminum. Throughout the first 18 months, they will get two more of those vaccines. They will also get the DTaP, the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine. Each one of those contains 625 micrograms of aluminum, and they will get four by the time they're 18 months. And I hope your people are taking notes. They will also get the Hib vaccine. That vaccine has 225 micrograms of aluminum. They will get three of those the first 18 months. The PCV vaccine contains 125 micrograms of aluminum. They will get four of those the first 18 months. And the hepatitis A vaccine contains 250 micrograms, and they will get two of those the first 18 months. They will also get the controversial MMR vaccine at 1 year of age, and they will also get flu vaccines at 1 year of age, which contains all kinds of garbage. So when you start adding all of this up, just the aluminum levels, according to Neil Miller, vaccine researcher, that child would have been injected with 4,925 micrograms of aluminum. Remember, the only study done said that anything injected over 20 micrograms for an infant could be toxic. How can you justify 4,925 micrograms of aluminum in the well baby vaccines by the time a child is 18 months of age? And I will also add that this does not take into consideration the viral load that goes in with each vaccination. And also, the hepatitis A vaccine, the rubella vaccine, the MMR vaccine, all contain aborted fetal cell lines. These vaccines are developed on aborted fetal cell line tissue. It's called human diploid tissue. Don't trust me on this. Go look it up on novaccine.com. I've been challenged on this many times, and even by doctors, and I'm like, you doctors don't know what you're injecting. You just haven't done the research. And I encourage everyone, Sally, to join me on Facebook because I post stuff regularly. And I recently posted a medical doctor or somebody who had been through med school did an overview of every book that they are that they learned from, every subject, every book in med school. And they documented how many pages in each book pertains to vaccinations. And it's shocking. The only book that pertained to vaccinations was a book on immunology, and I think it was a few chapters, period. And it did not go into common vaccine ingredients. So these doctors who are well-intended, you know, I'm not saying that doctors are bad or that they're intentionally hurting. I'm saying they're well-intended, but they're uninformed. They are ignorant to what's in a vaccination, how they're produced. They're ignorant to the amount of toxic ingredients, and therefore they really don't know what they don't know. But because of the internet and because of access to all of this, as parents, we can learn these things, and it's not difficult. And you can become your own medical vaccine expert by just simply watching YouTubes, listening, seeing the science, ordering books. There's hundreds of books on this topic now. And the good news is, we have a vaccine education revolution taking place in this country. And parents across this country and the world are doing the research. They're learning more and more all the time. And they are making informed vaccine decisions. And a lot of them are choosing to not vaccinate. And that is the movement that is taking place out there. And there's no stopping this movement. It's not going anywhere. And it's time for the doctors to stop defending their ignorance in this area. Take off their ego, put it aside, and just know that they have been deceived by their medical education. They have been indoctrinated about vaccinations and the safety of them, and they need to get educated about the dangers of vaccines.
I would like to ask you a question about a vaccine that's administered at birth in New York State. They don't even ask you. It's a shot called the vitamin K shot, and the second component in it is polysorbate 80. Having looked up a lot of different, I've checked out a lot of different sources about the polysorbate 80, and every single source says that it causes or leads to sterilization.
Yes.
This is a profoundly huge issue. The sterilization
yes,
of our children starting on the day of birth. Could you speak about this?
Yes. Well, the reason that the vitamin K is recommended is it thickens up the blood. It helps the blood to thicken. And, you know, there's tons of research. Parents can literally go and they can look it up. And I'm actually going to look and see. I think I have an article on vitamin K on my website. And if I don't, I'll have to get one up there. I don't see it. I know I've written on this many times, but vitamin K, the polysorbate in vitamin K has been proven in rats to lead to infertility. Polysorbate 80 is not a good thing to be injecting into anybody. There are many vaccines that do contain polysorbate 80. Again, parents, do your research on vitamin K. A lot of the reason that vitamin K is recommended is, again, to thicken blood. Considering that boys in this country are routinely given circumcision day two, day three, there's a chance, of course, for bleeding out because of that. Vitamin K, they say that there are, if a child has been through trauma, they could have internal bleeding. But what really can, I guess, do away with this whole concept of vitamin K is when you look at the cord blood, when a baby is born, I always encourage parents to let the cord stop pulsing because the blood is then taken out of the placenta and put into the baby. In that cord blood, we have stem cells. By the billions, stem cells, actually, when they're, you know, put right into the baby through the umbilical cord, their job is to go around the body and repair. These are beautiful, healing stem cells that are very, very important. So when a child is born, and obviously all of a sudden they're breathing and oxygen's getting into the lungs and oxygenating the blood, these stem cells go around like little Pac-Men and hit every area of the wherever the blood's going, they hit, and they repair. So if a baby's born in the hospital, let that cord finish pulsing before you tie it off, clamp it, and cut it, because that baby's going to get all these wonderful stem cells that go in and repair blood vascularity. And this is one of the problems they have bleeding problems after they're born, is because in the hospital, as soon as that baby's born, that cord is cut and clamped within 30 seconds. So all those wonderful stem cells don't get into that baby. Well, we have a brand new vascular system. We need those stem cells to go in and repair the first several days of life. And so just imagine it. You know, they're going around to all, they're being circulated throughout the whole body, repairing anything that needs to be repaired the first several days of life. And I do believe that in, you know, Jewish history and biblical history, they would circumcise boys on day seven, because it is naturally on day seven that blood will thicken up. Somewhere between day five, six, and seven, the blood naturally thickens up as the baby is nursing, getting nutrition. The blood begins to thicken up and mature a little bit, and it's that point when they circumcise babies, because that baby is less likely to bleed to death during the process. So the more you look into it, the more you see.
In terms of the umbilical cord, how long should they wait before they cut the umbilical cord? How long?
Well,
a period.
I've been to many, many home births. I had four home births myself. I have daughters-in-law and sons that have had home births. A lot of times mom has got the baby, daddy's got the baby, they're massaging that baby, and there's no rush. There's no rush whatsoever. It'll take sometimes 20 to 30 minutes before mother will deliver the placenta. And usually a midwife will feel and be able to tell when that placenta is done pulsing into the baby. So they literally, they're not in a rush. You know, it could be 20 minutes before that cord is cut. The longer the better. The big thing is making sure that it's done pulsing out and pumping all of the blood from the placenta to the baby. Another thing to consider, too, is when that cord is prematurely cut, you are holding back cups and cups of blood from that baby that belong in that baby's body. So then that baby's body is in perhaps a mini crisis, because now it has to produce blood to circulate around the body. So cutting the cord early causes a cascade of problems. And I think it's something that modern medicine needs to catch up with. They need to realize that nature did not make any mistakes, that the body does things at its own pace for good reason. And so the more we get away from this medical model of birthing being a medical procedure, the more we get away from that, the better off it is for mom and for baby.
Well, this has just been an excellent interview, I have to say. I wish I had this interview to send to my niece before she had a child. This is so important for pregnant women to hear. I'm going to make sure that pregnant women hear this interview especially. Thank you, Mary Toko.
You're welcome.
Am I saying your name correctly? Is it Toko or Toko?
Toko, Longo. Yeah.
Toko. Okay, that's what I Toko. Said. Okay. All right. So which of them, I would like to you to take a moment and tell everybody the benefits of vaccination.
The benefits of vaccinations? Oh my goodness. I don't know that there are any, to be honest with you. The more I learn about immunology and the more we learn about the, you know, ethyl mercury in vaccines that is still in there and the aluminum levels that is still in there, I've always been an advocate for natural immunity development. And I can tell you the benefits of that because that's where my focus is. I'm biased.
I wanted people to know that truly the benefits are theoretical and the damage and disease and death are real. This is a quote from Paul G. King, a PhD.
Yes.
He said,
absolutely.
You know, and I think he said it well, but I just wanted to let people know it's not like we are suggesting that the risks outweigh the benefits. The benefits do not exist. That's the deal.
I believe that. And it's because when you see what you're injecting into these young children, you know, we have phenol, polysorbate 80, we have acetone. Of course, there still is ethyl mercury in the vaccines. Don't let them lie to you and say that it's been removed or it's just a trace. In fact, let me digress on that. The form of mercury in a vaccine is ethyl mercury with an E. The form that we get through the environment and through, you know, water and everything is methyl mercury with an M. And even according to the Institute of Medicine, they say that ethyl mercury is more toxic than methyl mercury. And let me just see if I can find my reference. Yeah, hold on just a second. I'm actually getting into my lecture so that I do this properly. The material safety data sheet on ethyl mercury says that it can lead to brain damage, bone marrow problems, central nervous system problems, repeated and prolonged exposure. Produces target organ damage. And again, the mercury we're injecting is ethyl mercury. And so that's like comparing, you know, you hear doctors say all the time, oh, well, a baby will get more mercury in breast milk than they will in a vaccine, which is not true. That is totally false. And it's a different type of mercury to begin with. So the Department of Defense during World War II said that the mercury in vaccines was toxic and that Eli Lilly had to label it a neurotoxin. So let me just get here and reference what a trace is. So we're told that, you know, it's been reduced down to a trace. It can't hurt you. Well, a trace is a term come from the pharmaceutical industry who makes vaccines themselves. This is not a measurement of any sort. It's just a term to imply that they've reduced it down to a safe level. But when we look at mercury in water, the EPA safety level in water is 2 parts per billion with a B. So 2 parts per billion is the mandated limit in drinking water. 200 parts per billion of mercury in liquid waste renders it a toxic hazard. It has to be handled as a toxic hazard. In the food that they allow us as far as methyl mercury goes, they say anything between 730 and 1,400 parts per billion is the allowable limit in fish. And they actually tell women, when you're pregnant, don't eat the fish because that's enough to cause problems in the developing fetus. And they say if you're nursing, don't eat the fish. We know that mercury can get into the child and cause injury. So we give an infant flu vaccine in this country. When our children are 1 year old, they get an infant flu vaccination that contains 25,000 parts per billion. And the adult vaccination, injected vaccine given to adults, contains 50,000 parts per billion. That's a fact. So even by their own standards, they are injecting a toxic hazard material into your child, and they're saying vaccines are fully, you know, researched for safety. None of that's true. And any doctor who says this is just uninformed. They just don't know better. In fact,
want to point out the fact that when you eat something or drink something, your liver has an opportunity to cleanse it, you know?
Absolutely.
Directly into the bloodstream. there is no barrier, no cleansing mechanism. You're just directly poisoning
exactly.
your child.
It gets injected into the muscle, gets picked up in the blood system, gets circulated around every organ in the body, and there's no way to detox it out unless you have really good detoxing pathways, you know, in the brain that are functioning well. I believe that even children who got the vaccines who don't show any evidence of injury, because, you know, parents will say, well, you know, my child got vaccinated, my child's perfectly fine. How old is that child? Is that child going to have a form of brain cancer, bone cancer, lung cancer by the time they're, you know, 18, 20, 25, 30? We are now seeing, you know, SV40 viruses, which came from the polio vaccines that were injected and given to 98 million Americans all the way up and through the late 1980s. They're seeing that this SV40 virus that came from the African kidneys, the African monkey kidneys that they developed the viruses on, is now showing up in these bone, brain, and lung cancers. So, yes, your child might be well today or might not show any signs of injury, but what about food allergies, autism, asthma, attention deficit, hyperactivity, learning problems, depression, you know, diabetes, all of these things? Can be directly related to vaccinations, and this is not based on my opinion. In my lectures, I show the medical studies. I actually screenshot the medical studies so people know that I did not make this up.
Right.
So
we only have a few minutes, and I do want to get this question out, if I may.
Okay.
The anthrax vaccine, the men who were given that in the Gulf War, their children are suffering like symptoms. The joints, they have joint problems and other problems that their father basically gave to the mother and the mother who bore them. But it is going now into the third generation. I'm wondering about this SV40 virus. I saw an article where they said that a child had the SV40 virus. So is that you know,
oh, absolutely. We're the only place you can get it. This means simian virus 40. The only way you can get this is if you've been bitten by a monkey or received monkey parts and monkey blood or monkey you know, viruses in a vaccine. There's no other way to get it. And Sally, anthrax is terrible. It's no different than thalidomide. It was an experiment, and I believe there's a whole website that you can I think it's Joyce Riley, talks about her website, The Power Hour. She was a nurse. She's all about the anthrax. If you think that your loved one was hurt by military vaccines, go to Joyce Riley's website. Anthrax, our country was the only one, I'm sorry, France was the only country that did not do Gulf War vaccines. They have no Gulf War syndrome. You know, there's so much evidence out there that these anthrax vaccines were causal in causing Gulf War syndrome. There's a book called Vaccine A, Dr. Gary Matsumoto, who investigated this thoroughly. So the information's out there. People just have to seek. But in my lecture, I show you medical citations that say that vaccinations can cause food allergy, inflammatory bowel disease, kidney disease, leukemia, lymphomas, lupus, multiple sclerosis, obesity, seizures, convulsions and epilepsy, skin disorders, sudden infant death, cognitive dysfunction, allergies, asthma, arthritis, autism, of course, autoimmune diseases, chronic fatigue, deafness. When people find out how many children go deaf the first couple of years of life, it's shocking. Of course, demyelinization is when that myelin coating on the nerves is interfered with, leading to severe epilepsy and seizure disorders. Then, of course, diabetes and any kind of brain swelling in the form of encephalopathy can cause so many of these problems. And I show medical documentation that states that the vaccines can cause these things. So for the doctors out there who are still not aware and not looking, they need to take the blinders off. You know, I call it willful blindness. They don't want to face it. And I understand it's difficult to face. And for parents out there who might have vaccinated your children, I am so sorry that you didn't get this information. And I also want to say, Sally, that there's a lot that can be done to help children and people recover from vaccine injury. There are cases of children with full-blown autism who it has been completely reversed. And when you understand how a vaccine injures the child, whether it's their gut system, heavy metal toxicity, and